begin on chapter 6 of the Gita, and this chapter deals with meditation. And meditation, when we are speaking about meditation, in terms of this meditation, it is called Vedantic meditation. So meditation has many purposes. Some use it to improve the health also. But in this case, it is very specific. It is called Vedantic meditation. And this meditation has two stages. The first stage of meditation is called the preparation of the mind. And this occurs before there is knowledge. So we don't have knowledge yet of the self, yet we engage in meditation to prepare the mind. And this meditation, which is called preparatory meditation, in Sanskrit is known as Upasana Dhyana. U-P-A-S-A-N-A, Upasana Dhyana. Upasana Dhyanam is meditation on Saguna Ishvara, a Ishvara with form. And after we do this meditation, now actually we must understand meditation means what? The definition of meditation is fixing your mind on an object for a length of time. So this preparatory meditation called Upasana Dhyanam is trying to fix your mind on a Saguna Ishvara, on a God with form. And then we go through the next stage, which is where we gain knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of the highest nature of God, which is called Brahman. Therefore, first is Upasana Dhyana, next stage comes Jnana Yoga, which requires us to do Sravanam and Mananam. Listen to the knowledge and reflect on that knowledge. And then, once we reflect on the knowledge and we come to know about this higher nature of God, the highest nature of God, then comes the next level of meditation. So what is that higher nature of God we must know? What is the truth? Vedanta says, whatever you are seeking in life, you are seeking fullness, you are seeking happiness, you are seeking security, whatever you are seeking, this knowledge tells us that I am already that. I am seeking fullness. Vedanta says, you are fullness. I am seeking security. Vedanta says, your real nature is security. It is Satchit Ananda. That is what you are seeking is yourself. So once we come to this realization, which is gained through Shravanam Mananam, then the second stage of sadhana is, whatever knowledge I have gathered, now I have to experience that. So the second level of meditation is called Nididhyasana. That is to experience that knowledge which you have attained. Nididhyasana. So what are the stages? Preparatory meditation is called Upasana Dhyanam. Then comes Shravanam Mananam to gain the knowledge. Then through this Shravanam Mananam, I gain clear knowledge. And then comes the removal of all the impurities in my mind. Freedom from what? Freedom from all the impurities. And then comes the final stage, which is called Nididhyasanam, to absorb this knowledge, experience the self, and then one reaches the state called Jivan Mukti. Now, when we come to this stage of Nididhyasana, which is going to be described in chapter 6 here, we must understand one thing, that although we have gone through the Upasana Dhyanam, we've gone through Shravanam Mananam, but when we sit down for Nididhyasana meditation, we still have one more barrier, and that is we find that we still have certain mental disturbances. Because although we have the knowledge, but when we sit in meditation, there is some disturbances in our mind. This disturbance is caused by our actions that we have done over the past lives and over this life, which lie in the very subconsciousness of your mind. So when you try to still your gross mind, yet you have a lot of vasanas, past experiences, behavioral tendencies that exist in the subconscious mind. And at time of meditation, these experiences in the subconscious mind will arise. So nididhyasanam is the meditation to ultimately remove even these tendencies of the subconscious mind. And then only you find that there is a transformation, there is a change, right? So these which are ingrained in the mind, in Sanskrit, they are called viparitara bhavana, V-I-P-A-R-I-T-A, viparita bhavana, which are all the impressions we have gathered from childhood, and they exist in our subconscious mind. So now we've understood that the process is upasana dhyanam, leading to shravana mananam, leading to nididhyasanam, the higher state of meditation. Now, therefore, what this chapter deals with, as I've explained, is the higher state of meditation, which is known as nididhyasanam. So, what are the topics which are covered in this chapter? Basically, this chapter is divided into five main topics. The first topic is, and these are not presented in order, although I am giving you the five topics covered in this chapter, Krishna does not present them in that same order. He keeps on jumbling about everything. Okay? So, but these five topics are covered. One is, what are the general preparations for meditation? Because meditation is not just sitting down and doing meditation. Prior to sitting down in meditation, there are certain preparations which we have to do. In Sanskrit, again, they are called bahir anga sadhana, sadhanam. Bahir means outward, anga means limbs of sadhana, which are general disciplines that we have to observe in our daily lives. So Krishna also will cover this first. What are the general disciplines we should observe in our daily life? Number one, first topic. Second topic, specific disciplines to prepare before we sit for meditation. Before we even start the meditation process, there are certain specific disciplines which we need to take care of. And these are called Vishesha Sadhana. Vishesha, V-I-S-H-E-S-H-A, Vishesha. Prior to starting a meditation, there are certain conditions we have to observe. Then the third topic which Krishna will cover here is Dhyana Swarupam. Dhyana Swarupam means the process of meditation. What is this meditation? Because many people still don't understand what is meditation. Is it concentrating on something? Is it remaining thoughtless, still, silent? So what is this? What is actually called meditation? There are so many definitions, but let us see what Krishna defines as meditation in chapter 6. And the fourth topic is called Dhyana Phalam. Dhyana Phalam means what is the benefit of meditation? Are we going to get some special miraculous powers? Or what is the actual result or the fruit of this meditation? And finally, the fifth topic is, what are the obstacles and the remedies that we face in meditation? Like especially the biggest obstacle when we sit in meditation is what? Mind is restless. What else?
Speaking of our workaholic children,
the biggest problem is falling asleep. Is that right? No, you don't fall asleep. Because if any time you have a legs painful, because you sit on the floor. You sit on the floor. And you don't have to sit on the floor. That is the important thing you have to understand. Anywhere which is comfortable. So many such obstacles come up. Thinking about the past, thinking about the future, falling, tendency to fall asleep, a lot of this. So some of the obstacles Krishna will talk about and give us the remedies for that also. Okay? And there is a sixth topic. After discussing about meditation, there is a sixth topic. I said five, but I lied to you. No, I'm just joking. Five topics are concerned with directly with meditation. In chapter 6, there is a sixth topic which has no connection with meditation, but because of a question that Arjuna asks, it is related to the next, our future birth. So, the state of your present mind will decide your next birth. This is what Krishna also will discuss in chapter 6 also, which is not connected to meditation. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And remedies to the obstacles that we face in meditation. Okay, so first of all, before we even sit for meditation, because many people just jump in and sit for meditation, or you go away for weekend meditation camp. But here what Krishna is trying to say, what is the role or right action? We have to prepare the right mindset. We have to cultivate the right mindset. So how many minds have you got? Huh? Thousands of minds. How many minds have you got?
One.
Are you sure? You think so? We have only one mind, isn't it? There is only one mind. Thoughts are many. Your mind is only one. And this same mind which you use for practicing meditation is the same mind that you are also engaging in the world. So if you are constantly facing frustration, anger, disappointment, jealousy, pride, ego, this same mind you are going to bring back home and try to sit for meditation. So you can understand what are the obstacles there already. Right? We only have this one mind which we try to engage in meditation. And that meditation might be 5 minutes, 10 minutes or 15 minutes. But throughout the day, the same mind is engaged in all the various transactions of the world which bring about all the various disturbances. So therefore, the first thing is before we even go and sit in meditation, we have to ensure that we lead the right lifestyle to discipline and cultivate the right mindset. So all these irritations, anger, frustrations that you face, how do we deal with them? Just like when we come for this Gita class, what is the first thing that we do? We say a prayer. The idea of saying the prayer is to calm the mind down so that the mind then can tune off from the outside experiences and try to focus on the knowledge here. So the same it is for meditation also, to maintain a balanced mind. And how do we maintain this balanced mind to prepare the mind for meditation, which makes the mind ready for meditation? So in the very first verse, Krishna addresses this point here, right? Which fall under the first topic, which is called Bahiranga Sadhana, the external preparations prior to sitting for meditation. And what is that preparation called here? Krishna says in chapter 6 verse 1, karma phalam anashritaha. Karma is all our actions that we do throughout the day. Phalam means the results of the action. Anashritaha means do not be dependent on them. Karma phalam anashritaha. So there are all kinds of benefits we get from our daily transactions. There is name, there is fame, there is promotion, there is power, there are so many benefits we get. And the thing is, First of all, we have to train our mind to detach ourselves away from all these results of our actions. Because if we cannot train our mind to detach the mind away from the benefits of our actions, these same thoughts we are going to bring up again in meditation. So first of all, lead a life of karma yoga. Detach yourself from the don't be dependent on the results of your action. Cultivate the karma yoga lifestyle first. Very important. So karma phalam anashritaha. And yet he says at the same time in the second line of verse 1, karyam karma karoti. You do all the actions. What type of actions do you undertake? Karoti means you perform. Karyam karma. Whatever are your obligatory, karyam karma means all your obligatory actions you must undertake, you must not give up, you must perform. And we play various roles throughout our life. We play various roles at different times. All these roles we must undertake with the attitude of surrendering the results to God. And all this karyam karma generally will fall under our swadharma. Swadharma means, which we have discussed in chapter 4, which is according to your varna, your according to your gunas, the type of duties that you take up, the type of profession that you take up, that is not to be abandoned. So carry on performing all your swadharma. Even if you are a shudra, that means you are a person doing manual labor, you have to learn how to turn all your actions as a worship of God. So whether you are a brahmana or a kshatriya or a vaishya or a sudra, whatever profession you have taken up based on your own inherent nature, you must learn how to convert all your actions into worship in accordance with what the scriptures are telling us. And second is called ashrama, which we have also discussed in chapter 4. As we have to go through various stages of life, student life, married life, retired life, there are also different duties that we have to perform. All these are fall under karyam karma, obligatory duties. Okay. So generally all our actions, the scriptures tell us, will fall under three categories, whatever actions we do. And what are the three actions? One is known as forbidden actions. Forbidden actions is known as nishida karma, N-I-S-H-I-D-A, nishida karma, forbidden actions, which the scriptures of course tell us are to be totally avoided. There is no if and but, there is no question. These forbidden actions have to be totally avoided. The second type of actions are called sakama karma. Kama means desire. Sakama means actions which are driven by desire. And how do we understand this? Any action which is driven by the result, that is called sakama karma. Whenever I am interested in the result, and if the result is favorable to me, and if the result is favorable to me, I do that action, that falls under sakama karma. And these type of actions are to be gradually reduced. And the third type of action, which is called nishkama karma. The first was sakama karma. This is nishkama karma, means which is devoid of any desire for result. Now, if the desire for result does not drive my action, then what is it that should drive my action? If we say the desire for action should not be your motivating factor, then what should be my motivating factor? What should be?
The love for that person and your duty.
Duty should be.
Should be number one.
Yeah.
At the same time, the duty must come with love.
Correct, okay, so...
Because there's no love. After, literally, the old man kicks the bucket. Say, I've seen this happening now. I did that, I got this property, I did get this. You should then don't do it.
So, very important what you mentioned, duty. the driving factor or the motivating factor for me to do any action is that it is my duty, full stop. Right? Once I put a comma there, means I expect something that falls under sakama karma. If I say it is my duty, full stop, that is nishkama karma. So the same word here used is karyam karma karoti. Do all your obligatory actions as a duty. Do not abandon any actions which are your duty. Right? So those type of actions are never to be given up, are to be what you call to be encouraged, that we must do this type of action. So therefore, all the actions that we do may or may not give us some personal benefits. Right? There may be some artha, there may be some karma. In nishkama karma, what is the benefit? When we do selfless actions as duty, what is the benefit? Maybe other actions that we do driven by desire, we can see material growth. We can see some visible, tangible returns. Better salary, bigger car, bigger house. But when we are driven by duty, we may or may not see some tangible growth. It is just like when people, when you come for Gita class, people ask you, why do you attend Gita class? You know, is your salary increase? Do you get name, fame? Do you get a bigger car? So we don't see the tangible benefits. So where are the benefits then? Because most people are looking for tangible benefits which they can see, which they can experience. But when we go on the spiritual path, you may or may not see tangible benefits. So where is the benefit then? Where is the benefit?
Right. So there's an inner satisfaction.
Calmness of mind, calmness of mind, peace, and there is tranquility,
joy.
Inner joy.
Inner joy.
Right. So we have to understand this, that there is, there may not be what you call tangible growth, but definitely when we do any action as a form of duty without expecting results, there is definitely inner purification, there is inner growth. There is calmness of mind, there is tranquility, there is change in the perspective of how we deal with the world. So there is positive inner change. So Krishna says, one who does anashritaha karma phalam, karyam karma, doing every action as karyam karma, as duty, without expectation of the results. Krishna says in the third line, saha sannyasi, and not only that, cha yogi. Such a person can be called a sannyasi, such a person can also be given the title of a yogi. And if you look at the technical term of the sannyasi, what Krishna is saying here, that sannyas, a person who is a householder, because here he is saying do your obligatory duties, means who is he talking about? A householder who has got many obligatory duties. And he's saying that householder is a sannyasi. He is as good as a monk. He is a renunciate. Even though he has all the possessions, he lives in society, he has all his possessions, but yet Krishna says he is a sannyasi. Whereas the technical definition of a sannyasi is one who has given up everything. But Krishna is saying no, even that householder can be called a sannyasi. Why is that? Not attached to his positions, possessions, and to people, to objects. He has not physically renounced, but very importantly, he has mentally renounced. He has mentally renounced all possessions and relations. And Ramakrishna Paramahansa gave a beautiful reply one day when he was asked by a devotee, how should one live as a householder? And the reply he gave was, one should live as a householder in their house like how a maid servant lives in a house. How does a maid servant live? She looks after your children, she cooks, she cleans the house, she takes care of the whole house, but always at the back of the mind, what does she know? Or what does she realize? This house is not mine. These children are not mine. I am also a child of God. I am also a creation of God. Who is my spouse? Who is my children? They also have come from God. So, what is my duty? My duty is to serve those who are also a children of God. There is no attachment. We do our duty with total detachment. So, Ramakrishna says, live like a housemate in your own house. Right? Only disadvantage, you don't get salary. That's all. You do all the work. So, I have them, they are in my possession, but they are not mine. Disassociate yourself that these belong to you. That they may have come from you, the children may have come from you, but they have come with their own karma. The reason they are here, they have come with their own karma. They have their own destiny. Yours is only a limited time that you spend with them, but they have their own destiny already written there. So, understand this, that nothing actually belongs to you. Everything has come with your own karma. So even in Sadhana Panchakam, which is a short text written by Adi Sankaracharya, he also says this. He says, once you have attained the knowledge, that spiritual knowledge, then he says you should leave your home immediately. And of course people misinterpret, they think that you should just abandon your home and go on. So when he says you leave your home immediately, when this knowledge dawns on you, it means that you should then practice total detachment, mental detachment. That is what he means by leave your home immediately. That you have no more attachment to this house, this family, but you carry on doing all your duties. So the detachment is mental. So here what he says is, do not be dependent. For your peace of mind, for your security, for your happiness, do not be dependent upon family, upon possession, upon name, fame, power, for your peace, for your security, for your happiness. Change your direction of seeking. Such a person is called a sannyasi. And not only is he a sannyasi, Krishna says, saha yogi cha. Such a person, saha, is also a yogi. Why is he called a yogi? Because he has got the attitude of a yogi, which means carrying out all his actions and duties with the right attitude, without thinking of loss or gain, without thinking of pleasure or pain. Mind is fully available for the present, not thinking about past and future. So, that is what is called a yogi. One who does all the actions without thinking about past or future. And such a kind of lifestyle will prepare the mind for the state of meditation. Because meditation is not trying to sit in meditation and discipline the mind. What is meditation? Discipline the mind and sit in meditation. Many people think that when I reach the state of meditation, I'll be able to calm the mind. No, it doesn't work that way. It is when you lead a disciplined life, you have already disciplined the mind, and then you sit in meditation, you will realize that self within you. So it is a lifestyle which is very important for us first to cultivate and discipline this mind. And that lifestyle here, Krishna says, is the karma yoga lifestyle. That is anashritaha karma phalam karyam karma karotiya. So mind is fully available for that meditation. It is calm, it is focused. It is soaked with devotion for Lord. Such a mind will not find it difficult to sit in meditation. So our attitude in our action will play a great role in our progress or decline on the spiritual path. This is what we have to understand. Okay? Right attitude and right action. But if there is a mortal, if there is a person who is awakened to the highest goal of life, then only you will be able to succeed in meditation. So a karma yogi is never a failure. Whatever the external outcome of the action, one thing is certain, there is definitely inner growth, there is inner purification. Okay. So here Krishna says in the fourth line of this verse, a sannyasi technically is not defined as one who is na nirapnir, Na niragnir, you see the word apnir is fire. So in those Vedic times, a householder had many fire rituals to do. When a child is born, you do fire rituals. When you get married, you do fire rituals. When you move into a new house or start a new business, you do ritual. Also, every day at the altar, when we pray, we light a flame, a fire, or whatever it is. So this is part and parcel of a householder's duty. Throughout the life, we find that there are many rituals that we have to do. But when you become a sannyasi, you are not supposed to do any fire ritual. You are supposed to give up all rituals. But Krishna is saying that does not make one a sannyasi. Just by giving up the rituals does not qualify you to be a sannyasi. So, it is not physical, it is not outward renunciation, it is inner renunciation. So, na niraknir means just because you give up these fire rituals, you still do not be called, you cannot be qualified to be called a sannyasi unless you have what you call discipline the mind through right action. That's what Krishna wants to stress. Not just by giving up fire can you be called a sannyasi. And what else he says? Nacha akriya. Not by giving up duties and responsibilities. Therefore, we should not think that by surrendering all my duties and responsibilities and living a life in an ashram qualifies me to be a sannyasi. That also Krishna says, by giving up all your actions also, you do not qualify to be a sannyasi. On the contrary, karyam karma, doing your duties and responsibilities and obligations with the right attitude, that person is called a sannyasi. So as a householder, by following this advice in verse number 1, we can be called a sannyasi and a yogi. Because if we have not disciplined the mind, if we go away to ashram, during meditation, the mind also is running all over the world also. So such a person is a true sannyasi, a true yogi. Now, in the next verse, verse number 2, so now Krishna has defined who is a sannyasi, who is a yogi due to the internal change, not to the external change. And very important here, you have to use your free will to decide on the right action and your freedom to choose your response to all actions. We do have that free will. So as a householder, we must understand we have that free will to practice karma yoga in the right method also. So now, here in this verse here, Krishna is speaking to us about what is that obstacle, what is that very obstacle to renunciation, to inner renunciation. Why is it that we are unable to practice this inner renunciation? For that, he uses one word here in verse number 2. If you look at this third line, the word sankalpa. Sankalpa is worry or constant anxiety about the future. Constantly our mind is projecting into the future. Worry and anxiety about the future. Now, again, we should not confuse worry and planning for the future. It does not mean that as a householder you cannot plan for the future. But there is a difference between planning and worry. Then what is the difference? What is the difference between planning for the future and worrying for the future?
One is helpful, one is not.
Exactly. One is helpful, one is not helpful. What else?
By worrying, you can't even think clearly.
Correct. Correct. Exactly. What else? Right. Right. And worry? Worry, planning is a deliberate action which is in your control at a fixed time, isn't it? Worry is never a deliberate action. It is a mechanical reaction which can happen at any time which is not in your control. So understand, planning is a deliberate action in your control. Worrying is a spontaneous or mechanical reaction which is not in your control. Because can you say that I fix my day every day from 6:30 to 7:30, I'll only do this for worrying me. I'll keep aside 1 hour for worrying. And then when before 6:30 comes, you're happily laughing. Then the alarm goes off 6:30, suddenly you put on a sad face. And then 7:30, suddenly again you're laughing. So worry is a mechanical reaction which is not in your control. And therefore, worry is the very obstacle that makes you inefficient in the present. Whereas planning makes you efficient in the present. As the sister said, worrying does not bring any benefit or does not bring any result to your action also. So here, when he talks about sannyasa, that is what he means about. That person has given up all the anxieties or worries for the future. Sankalpa. In the ancient text, in fact, the word sannyasa, which has been described, a sannyasi is one who must have three qualities. In the Rig Veda, it is said that a sannyasi is one who must have kesim. Kesim means long hair. That was the definition of the sannyasi in those days. So, you must have long hair. Second quality is mala, which means the clothes that you wear must be the color of the soil. So, the color of the soil is generally red, orange, or what you call yellow. General color of the soil. So, the color of the clothes must be the color of the soil. And third is quality of a sannyasi is mananat. Mananat means the mind which is constantly fixed in meditation. But that is an ancient definition. Here what Krishna is telling us, that is not sannyas. Sannyas is a internal renunciation. So it is possible to remain as a householder and carry on. But what is very important here, he is saying sankalpa. One who has given up this sankalpa. The direct translation is given up thoughts of the world, but it just does not mean thoughts of the world. It means worries and anxieties about the future. So as we go about our day-to-day transaction, there are always many things that preoccupy our mind. And there, because of this preoccupation, we must understand this preoccupation of the mind, worries, anxieties, they will leave an impression in our subconscious mind. And it is at the time of meditation you will find that all these thoughts will arise and disturb your meditation. So we should find a method how to overcome these worries and anxieties. And that we have also been already given in chapter 2 also. I'll come back and discuss that. So a householder is a sannyasi who has given up attachment for the future by surrendering everything to the Lord. So Krishna says here, Vidhi. Vidhi means know that sannyasa iti prahur, what is called as sannyasa, prahur means called as sannyasa, that is the same as yoga. When we say karma yoga, the destination is the same, sannyasa also the destination is the same. They are not two separate paths, they are one and the same. Because both lead to the same goal. They lead to the same state of renunciation. So, here he says, na kashchana, anybody who has not renounced, given up this sankalpa, this desire, cannot become a yogi. If you are unable to give up this anxiety or worry for the future, you cannot progress on the spiritual path. So you have to renounce sankalpa. And we will talk about sankalpa again in verse 4 when he speaks more about sankalpa. So I'll come back to that. Sankalpa, which causes all kinds of modifications on the mind. Now the question is, how long shall we go on purifying the mind? Because first we start with karma yoga, that is what we learned in chapter 3. You start with karma yoga, you purify the mind, then you go to jnana yoga. The question here is, how long should we follow this path of karma yoga? That means doing our duties with detachment. So here Krishna mentions two parts. One is called Aru Ruksho. If you look at verse number 3, there's one word there called Aru Ruksho. Aru Ruksho means the one who is at the beginning stage of spirituality. It's a technical term to define a person who is beginning on the stage of spirituality. It's called a Aru Ruksho. That means generally it covers all of us, most of us, who are striving on the spiritual path. So what should we do? Krishna says, Aru Ruksho Yogam, Aru Ruksho Munir Yogam, Karma Karanam Ucchate. First of all, our objective is to become a Muni. Again, Muni here, translated directly is sage. But actually what it means again is, Muni means a person who has a reflective mind, a one who has a refined mind. So Muni, that is what is called a Muni. Here the word given is sage, but actually what it means is a refined mind. So when we are starting on the spiritual path, how do we gain this refined mind? How do we refine our mind? Krishna says, Karma Karana Muchate. Do all your actions in the spirit of Karma Yoga. The first very important thing is, as we are progressing on the spiritual path, we need not jump into meditation, jump into jnana, everything. But first of all, do all our actions with the right attitude. So first of all, take up all your duties, do all your action with the right attitude. So Muni means to gain that purification, the purified state of mind. And then Karma Karana Muchate. Then what do? You reach the next stage, which is called Yoga Arudasya. In the third line that you see the word Yoga Arudasya. Yoga Arudasya means now that that person has reached the stage of purification, now the mind is calm, the mind is peaceful. What do you do now? How do you turn the mind inward now? So then he says, for such a person, Samaha Karanam Ucchate. Samaha here means renunciation of actions is said to be the means. That means what? When you start on Karma Yoga, first engage in all kinds of spiritual activities. Do your prayers, do your mantras, go to temple, go for pilgrimage, do all your duties and responsibilities. When your mind has reached a state of purification, then what should you do to all the spiritual sadhana that you're doing? If you have been doing hours and hours of prayers and going to temples and doing chanting mantras, what should you do with all this? You don't stop, but you reduce, you minimize. Why do you minimize? Why should you minimize all this? You can devote more time to knowledge and meditation. And you must understand, what is the purpose of all this? The purpose of doing prayers, mantras, going to temple, going to pilgrimage, doing seva. What is the purpose of all this? Purpose is to purify the mind. If you have already reached the state of purification, then what is the purpose of this sadhana? That is what he is telling you. You have to understand, the purpose of doing the sadhana was to reach the purified mind. Now with the purified mind, you have to progress to the next stage of knowledge and meditation. But if you carry on doing all these extra activities, how are you going to devote your time for meditation and for knowledge? Now the question always we ask then, not that you keep on doing karma yoga for so many lifestyle until you reach the purified stage, then only you go into knowledge. It can be done simultaneously, but you have to learn how to adjust. Because many people don't come to knowledge. When yesterday I was speaking to a group of people we're going to do a very short 12-week overview course on Bhagavad Gita. And most of these people, they are in their 40s and 50s and 60s. They were telling me one thing, that all of them are very, very well versed on rituals. They know about rituals, they know about temples. But when I ask them, what is, and they want to know knowledge of the scriptures. They are interested to know what is Bhagavad Gita, etc. So I asked them one question. Do you know what is Bhagavad Gita? They gave me all kinds of replies except the right reply. They say it is the life history of Krishna. Somebody said it is the life story of Arjuna. Somebody said this, somebody said that. They were totally unaware of what the scripture is. Although they heard about it, They want to know about it, they have a thirst for it, but they totally do not know anything about it. But they said, we have been brought up doing rituals. So rituals are good. They have led us to this stage where the mind is purified, where the mind is calm, it is ready to seek knowledge, it has the thirst for knowledge. Then we have to find the time for knowledge. And thus we have to minimize certain rituals and prayers so that we can devote our time to knowledge. And that's why he says, when you have reached that stage, samaha karanam uchate. Samaha means renunciation of action is the means, karanam, to reach the final stage. And this withdrawal can be in two ways. When we say we withdraw from all our actions, there are two methods in which we can withdraw. The first is what is called a very traditional way of withdrawing, which is going away to an ashram and taking up total sannyas. That is one option that is open to us, where we give up all these prayers, rituals, duties, everything, etc., and go off to an ashram. It's called a formal withdrawal. And the second type is by remaining in the household ashram, grihas ashram, but reduce all the various sadhana that you used to do before. So that reduction in the sadhana will allow you the time to develop or to use that time to develop your knowledge. Because everybody gives the same excuse. When it comes to knowledge, everybody says what? No time. No time. But if you want to progress to the next stage, definitely you need knowledge. And in order to gain knowledge, you need to find time for it. And to find time for it, you have to minimize other activities. So, give up other activities and find time for sravanam, mananam, vididhyasanam. So now the question is, how to know when the time is right for me to minimize my activities and take up knowledge? Is there a way which I can judge or evaluate myself? And in verse number 4, Krishna tells us the answer. How to know if you have reached this stage of yoga arudasya, that you are ready to now reduce your action and increase your effort for knowledge? So here Krishna says, yada, when indriyarteshu na anusajjate. Indriyateshu na anusajjate. Indriyateshu means when your senses and the objects of senses, you are not attached to the objects of your senses. Now, what does this mean? When you are not attached to the objects of your senses means when your mind is free from obsession with kama and artha. When you do not give value to pleasures and objects, acquisition of objects and pursuit of pleasures. When your mind itself is not interested in this, you can understand that you are now ready to move on to the next stage. When your mind finds no values for all these pleasures and objects. And the word here again he uses sankalpa. So let us understand this word sankalpa. Sankalpa means obsession. It is not just projecting the future, worries and anxieties about the future, it is an obsession. Because our scriptures do not prohibit us to enjoy some pleasures and what you call acquire objects. But it is when you are obsessed with artha and kama, what does it mean? When your mind is constantly thinking about what other pleasures I can enjoy, what other objects I can buy, where can I go, you know, eat here or buy this or go somewhere, what happens to this mind now? If the mind is constantly obsessed with kama and artha. Not only constantly agitated, but what is the problem in his mind now? It is not available for you to gain knowledge. Such a mind which is constantly obsessed with pleasures, with karma and artha possessions, such a mind is not available for you to use in knowledge. So how do I detach myself? That is the process of karma yoga. That's why he says, when you are starting on the process of spirituality, do the right actions with the right attitude. slowly your mind gets purified, it starts to get detached from karma and artha. Then your mind is ready. So, ready to, he says, na karmashu. Karmashu means when your mind is obsessed with all kinds of objects and pleasures, what will it lead to? Definitely all your actions also in life will lead you to pursuit of pleasures and possessions. So such a kind of thoughts, such a kind of actions is definitely not conducive for you to to progress on the spiritual path. So we have to learn to judge ourselves now. Is our mind constantly projecting on pleasures and objects? If our mind is constantly focusing on objects of pleasure, then what should we do? Increase more karma yoga, increase more upasana, meditation, increase more prayers, rituals, chanting of mantras, do seva, do all these activities to bring calmness to the mind. And you will find when your mind gets calm, it starts thinking about higher thoughts, more noble thoughts. It does not think about just satisfying pleasures and acquiring objects. So, here he says, therefore detachment is very important. Such a person who is not constantly obsessed with karma and artha, Krishna says, sarva sankalpa sannyasi. He is sarva means he is a constant sannyasi. He is constantly called a sannyasi because the mind is now reflecting on higher thoughts, on higher values in life. Sarva sankha sannyasi. So, again, the word sankalpa, we have to really understand this because it means obsessions. When the mind is just obsessed with karma, artha, then that mind is not available for any spiritual progress. And what does it mean when the mind is constantly projecting into the future? What does it mean when we constantly project? Okay, in the first place, why does the mind constantly project into the future?
Because insecure.
So what are we doing when our mind is constantly projecting into the future?
You are
comparing your present to the future. That is what you are doing. You are comparing your present to the future. It would be nice if I have a bigger house, a bigger car. It would be nice if I can do this, I can do that. So what you are doing? You are not happy with the present. You are comparing with the future. And as a result, neither do you enjoy the present and yet you have anxiety about the future. In both ways, you don't benefit. So the more and more your mind keeps on projecting into the future, you keep on comparing to the present. And that's why one of the most dangerous activities is comparing yourself to others. When you start comparing yourself to others, you feel deficient. Therefore, you project your future. And then you are so obsessed with the future that neither do you enjoy the present, neither are you, and you are always anxious about the future. And such a mind, Krishna says, definitely is not going to help you to progress in the spiritual path. So that's why our scriptures constantly say, be content with what you have. Have a plan, but surrender that to the Lord. Whether it happens or doesn't happen, accept it with an open heart. And thus your mind is calm, your mind is available to the present also. That's why, as I told you, I think last week, in English they have beautiful terms, they call it past tense, present tense, and future tense. Your past also is tense, your present also is tense, your future also is tense. Nothing but tense in all three times. So this is what we call hankering. We must understand hankering is different from planning, when your mind is stuck or obsessed with the future. And in chapter 2, verse 47, Krishna already warned us about this. If you remember the very foundation verse of Karma Yoga, chapter 2, verse 47. Do you all recall that verse? Karma neva dikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. Ma karma palahetu bhur ma tisangoste karman. Very famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita. And especially the first two lines. You go back to chapter 2, verse 47. Page 46. So in this verse itself, he has given us the formula for right action. So first he says, your right is to work only. Karmane eva adhikaraste. Now what does he mean to say your right is to work only? No, you don't know about work now. Your right is to work only.
It's your duty.
So what does it tell us now? Your right is to work only. You have choice of choosing your course of action. When it comes to action, you have total freedom to choose what you want to do. Whether you want to do something good or you want to do something bad. That choice, that free will has been given to you. And with choice comes what?
Responsibility.
So the responsibility to choose the right action lies in whose hands? Your own hands. So you have been given freedom to choose your action, and because you have been given the freedom to choose, there is a great responsibility for you to choose correctly, because your own future depends in your own hands. Then it tells you, ma paleshu kadachana, regards to your future or your result of your action, you have no right to the fruit of your action. Meaning what? You have no right to the fruit of the action. Meaning what? You have choice to your action, but you have no choice to dictate the result of the action. You cannot 100% predict the outcome of your action, isn't it? Because your action does not only depend on yourself, it depends on 100 other factors also, including the most important factor, prarabdha karma, your past action. So your past actions can change the outcome of any action, which is totally not in your control. So understand, if I have the choice to choose my action, I should choose it with great responsibility. And if I have no choice to choose the outcome, what should I do? Surrender that to God. Because I have no choice to choose the outcome of my action. So why do I worry? Why do I have so much anxiety? Will this happen? Will that happen? Will this fellow say like that? Will that fellow do like that? That is totally not in my control. Whatever the outcome of the action, Krishna is saying here, it is not in your control. So what should you do? Surrender that. So the essence of karma yoga has been given to us. That is also now, he is repeating in a different way when he says, sankalpa, that anxiety, that worry of the future, surrender that. Such a person, Krishna says, is the true sannyasi, who has learned to surrender the anxieties and worries of the future. And we have to understand that security is not an external factor. We can have all the money in the world, we can have all the possessions in the world, yet who's the person who has the most amount of security guards? Or security people. It is a rich person, isn't it? It is a rich person who has the most amount of security people surrounding him, because he's got so much to lose. So where is that insecurity in his mind, despite having everything? So security does not depend on external condition. Security is a state of the mind. You can have very little possession, yet you feel very secure, very content, very happy also. So here Krishna says, tada yoga ruddhasya uchyate. Such a person who is not obsessed with the future, agitations of the future, but does all his duties and responsibilities, surrendering the results to Lord, such a person can be said to reach a stage of yoga arudasya. And thus, if you have reached that stage of yoga arudasya, where you have surrendered all the future to Lord, Krishna says, then your mind is at peace, your mind is calm, and now you are ready to move to the next stage of spirituality. That stage is called samatva. Okay. Now, these two verses, verse 5 and 6, are very important. They are very often quoted verses in the Bhagavad Gita. They are very famous verses. And both 5 and 6, and they can be what you call understood together. Now, what basically these two verses are going to tell us is that since we have no control over external factors, you have no control over people, over objects, over situations. Why? Because they are constantly changing, they are unpredictable, and they are uncontrollable. Isn't it? That is what the external condition is. They are constantly changing, they are unpredictable, and they are uncontrollable. Therefore, the only thing I can change is what? My response to the external situation, which is fortunately within my control. Right? Now, therefore, you know, there's a very nice quote I read. What is the biggest room in the world? What is the biggest room in the world? R-O-O-M.
Your mind.
What is the biggest room in the world? Room for improvement. There's no limit, isn't it? How much you want to improve yourself, you can improve yourself. So these two verses are basically telling us this exactly this thing, that self-effort is very, very important in our spiritual path. Self-effort is called as purushartha in Sanskrit, it is called as prayatna, and we have been gifted with this free will to exercise our free will and put in our self-effort. Okay. But first of all, what is the difference? Because many people say, what is the point of self-effort? What is the point of free will? We have been born with our karma. No matter what I do also, my karma is like that. So, why talk about free will? Do I really have free will? So first of all, we must understand what's the difference between faith, F-A-T-E, and fatalism. What is the difference with faith and fatalism?
Faith is the common in the product.
F-A-T-E, faith, okay.
Whatever happens, it's fatal.
Right.
Because of your
perception.
Fatalism is an ideology.
How?
Think that
nothing can change. So faith also, you are accepting your faith, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
true. You can change it.
Can you?
You can modify it. Yeah, you can modify your future generation. You and your future births, you get
your future births, yes. So, one of the factors when we talk about faith, the difference between faith and fatalism. When we talk about faith, you understand it is one of the factors which influences the future. Right? When we talk about faith, we understand faith is there, prarabdha is there. As a result of my past action, that is one of the factors which can affect my future. But at the same time, I say there is also a second factor, which is self-effort. So not only faith can affect my future, but self-effort can also affect my future also. So I accept both. I accept faith and I accept my self-effort. Right? So what is my self-effort? My self-effort is to reduce the impact of my faith, as you put it. My self-effort is to reduce the impact of my faith. Now, the faith also is of three types, according to what the scriptures tell us. One is called as prabala. Prabala means it is a very powerful faith. F-A-T-E, I'm talking about faith, F-A-T-E. One is that past faith is very powerful. No matter what you do, you cannot shake it, you cannot change it. That is one type of faith. It's very strong. Based on the past action, that faith is coming, it is very strong. So what can I do if I can't change it? For acceptance also, I need what? I need strength. I need free will. How to accept it. Okay? So that is one. Second is what is called madhyam. Means medium. Medium, you can manage it. You cannot totally change it, but you can manage it, you can go through it. So to manage it also, what do you need? Strength, which is your free will also. And the third is what is called as Durlabha. Durlabha means it is very weak. It can be modified, it can be totally cancelled out also by what is called Prayaschit Karma. That is, you do repentance. Supposing you keep fast, or the priest tells you every Saturday go and feed the birds, or go to the temple on this particular day, or feed 100 poor people. Example, those are all called Prayaschit Karma. There are karmas that can be modified, can be cancelled out also. Weak, because they are weak karmas. Now for that also, what do you need? Also self-effort. So whether it is a powerful karma, whether it is a medium karma, whether it is a weak karma, what do you need to go through all the three? Self-effort. You need the inner strength, you need the self-effort. Whatever it is, the karma that you are facing, self-effort is very, very important. But when we say fatalism, what is fatalism? Fatalism is, my fate is like that, what can I do, whatever I do also is going to happen, you see. That means you totally give up. That means you are not acknowledging that you have the fact of free will. You have totally negated free will. So fate is to accept both fate and free will are there. Fatalism is to just give up to your fate, which means that you don't even use your free will also. So here what Krishna is saying in verse number 5, in this context, and you see the word Atma all over the verses 5 and 6, so many Atmas, Atma, Atma, Atma. So here we must understand what is the real meaning of Atma. So let us look at verse 5, the first two lines. Uddare Atmana Atmanam, the first line. Okay, let's just look at the first line. Uddare Atmana Atmanam. Uddare means lift. Lift what? Atmanam, yourself, by Atmana, yourself. Lift yourself by yourself. What does it mean? Lift yourself by yourself. Self-effort is what? What is the Atmana here? First we must understand there is Atmanam and there is Atmana. Not jiva. So Atmana here we must understand is nothing to do with the soul or the jiva, but here the word Atmana means your own intellect, your mind, your body. You have to lift it. When he says lift means, what he means is refine these three equipments, because this, to do any action, to put in self-effort, you have been given three equipments. That is your body, your mind and your intellect. And in order to use it the right way, you have to refine all this. Every instrument should be clean, every instrument should be refined, and then it comes to ample use to you also. So we will discuss what he means by refining this, okay? So Uddare Atmana means use all the instruments that you have to refine them, make them healthy, make them pure, cleanse all the instruments that you have, because these are the instruments you will use for your self-effort. Then look at the second line. Natmanam avasadaye. Here again, Atmanam, yourself, na avasadaye, do not degrade yourself, do not weaken yourself, do not, how you say, pollute yourself, do not pollute your mind, your body, your intellect. So do not also have low self-esteem also, because many people, especially on the spiritual path, we always wonder, there are great masters like Ramakrishna, like Adi Shankaracharya, you know, all these people reach such a state of enlightenment. How can I ever reach that state? So what is the definition of a saint?
He's a sinner who never gave up.
He was a sinner who never gave up. Exactly, isn't it?
A sinner who never gave up.
That is a saint. A sinner who never gave up became a saint, isn't it?
A sinner. Oh, he was lucky, but he never gave up.
Yeah. So a saint is not...
He never gave up in his efforts.
His efforts. So what was this? Every saint has been a sinner, started as a sinner, but because he never gave up, he became a saint. So we should not underestimate our own effort, our capability. All of us have got a chance to reach that state of enlightenment. So never give up yourself, never bring yourself down, be confident. Now, therefore, what you have to do is basically he's telling you here, if you have to learn to master your senses, learn to master your mind, your body, your intellect. If you learn to master this, that is how you uplift yourself. The more and more you pollute your mind, your senses, your intellect, this is how you degrade yourself. Okay? So, we will come back next week and discuss more in detail these two verses 5 and 6. Okay? Right, we end with a prayer. Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat.